London dropped its dignity.
Yeah.
So has France and Germany.
Yeah.
All hands are dancing to a raggedy melody full of originality.
Sing it, though.
Hello and welcome to yesterday's Chip Paper, the bi-monthly-ish podcast where we go through old newspaper archives to find out stories that amuse and entertain us. My name is Jim.
And I am Violet. And we're a couple of amateur researchers based on opposite sides of the Atlantic. Jim is in New York and I am in London. And we just really like old newspapers and the bonkers stories that they contain. So every couple of weeks or so, we take a look at something that we found in the historic newspapers.
Yes. And this week, this period of time after the last podcast release, it is Violet's turn to tell me about a story that she has found in the newspapers.
So I actually found this episode story when I was looking for a completely different one.
That's always the best when that happens.
Yeah, always my favourite way to find a story. So I was looking through an issue of the Sheffield Evening Telegraph on the 11th of March 1913 when I saw an advertisement that had this picture of a very dapper-looking young man with his hair slicked back and a big bow tie. And it just had the headline, sleeplessness, comma, nervous breakdown.
Hang on, how big is this bow tie?
Well, probably kind of regular size, but it pops out because it's like black and white.
Ah.
And like, it's a very kind of neutral picture, but like his hair's jet black and then his bow tie is really dark. So maybe it was red.
Ooh.
I don't know. It just, it's a standout. It popped. So the advert continued, Mr. H. Grindle Matthews, the inventor of wireless telephony, writes, I suffered from nervous breakdown, sleeplessness, and fatigue, and a tendency to work irregularly, until I discovered phosphorine is a first-rate antidote for such troublesome conditions, or for dejection, and it immediately renews the strength of my nerves and exercises a stimulating effect on the whole of the nervous system.
What was it called? Phosphorine.
Phosphorine, but caution! There is only one phosphorine. Beware of illegal imitations. Don't be misled by phosphor this or phosphor that. They got phosphorine, the remedy of kings.
Are they just eating phosphor?
So I actually looked this up. And
wait, what is
actually
phosphor? I mean phosphorus.
Yeah, it's basically phosphoric acid and also sulfuric acid and a bunch of other stuff just like thrown in there.
God.
Which, I mean, I don't know, could it also explain a lot of the stuff that happened in this guy's life, maybe.
But he was too alkaline.
Yeah, just a little too alkaline. Got to sort out your alkies. So, Harry Grindle Matthews was born in Gloucestershire in 1880.
And he is the chap who is quoted as the inventor of wireless telephony.
Yes, the exact same,
yes.
Mr. Grindle Matthews. He studied at the Merchant Venturers School before starting his career as an electronic engineer. He enlisted in the South African Constabulary and worked as an electrical engineer during the Second Boer War, during which he was wounded twice. And on his return to England, he continued to work and started coming up with these unusual inventions. The first one that attracted media attention was the aerophone. It was an invention that he started work on during the war, which transmitted radio messages between people on the ground and aeroplanes. So this is the wireless telephony. So you might have seen the photo that I put on Twitter a little while ago that had the two guys holding up the kite.
I did see that.
So that was one of the public demonstrations of that invention. So the kite was used as a kind of transmitter
to
send the messages.
Hang on. It was to send messages from the ground to the sky.
Yeah, so during the demonstrations...
How did anybody... Was there a tiny man in the kite?
No, there was a tiny man in a monoplane. So he'd get a guy to just do a circle round an area in an aeroplane and send him a message. But I do have a great report explaining the entire thing.
No, you're not explaining any of it. So the kite bounces the signal off to the guy in the plane?
Yeah, the kite was a kind of transmitter for the message.
I get you.
And somehow that sent it to the plane.
I get you.
So He did a few of these demonstrations around the country by the looks of things, but the first one that took place was reported on in the Dundee Evening Telegraph.
Great paper.
On the 26th, yeah, our favourite, on the 26th of September 1911. And it says, "I was in the solitude of the heights when the voice first came to me. Far below, the crowd seemed like minute specks. Immediately beneath, a cloud of blue-black smoke told me that I was above the great chimneys of the Cardiff Electric Power Station. It was then that I heard the cheery, 'Hello, are you there?' of Mr. Grindle Matthews, and realised to the full a new meaning of this commonplace phrase cast up to me from the toy world below. In this manner, Mr. C.B. Hucks, the aviator, described to me," says the Express correspondent, "his first impressions on hearing Mr. Grindle Matthews' voice in the region of the clouds, though the speaker and his aerophone station were invisible to him."
It's insane that that's not that long ago.
Yeah, and it's a really nicely written report, but I won't go through all of it. But I like the reporter just ends with, "Perhaps in later years, the history of this event will not arouse any vast feeling of surprise, but to the small band of onlookers who faced the weather on Saturday, the wonder of it created an impression so profound that few will forget it."
What is nice, though, is that everything is so well written, when now it would be like, "This man went in a plane, you won't believe what happens next."
Yeah, the 10 things you won't believe about this thing that happened.
Yeah.
No, it is...
Did this man hear God?
So, while the papers all published these fantastic reports on the experiments that took place, and they immediately started calling him, like, the most impressive inventor that they'd ever seen, and how he was going to, like, win wars and things like that.
That is amazing that in the situation where there's a man flying a plane above electrical works, all of these things that humans aren't supposed to have, the radio thing is the greatest invention of all time.
Yeah, that is true.
It gives you,
I guess,
an idea of how impressive this was, you know? This sort of magic of, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, exactly. But the War Office called for further tests to be made with actual experts present. So all of these initial demonstrations took place in front of reporters. But that was okay. Grindle Matthews agreed to that. But it didn't quite work out as planned, as the Bexhill-on-Sea Observer reported on the 7th of October 1911. It says, "Mr. H. Grindle Matthews, the inventor of a wireless telephone, with which experiments were made at Bexhill some years ago, was to have given a demonstration before War Office and Admiralty officials, but it did not take place. Subsequently, Mr. Matthews made certain allegations against the War Office."
Ooh.
"A press representative was informed at the War Office that there is to be a thorough investigation into the allegation made by Mr. Grindle Matthews on the evidence of his assistants that his aerophone apparatus was tampered with at the War Office, and that sketches were made just as he was about to carry out a series of tests before the head of the department and of the Admiralty. At present," said an official at the War Office, "it is impossible to go into details, but a charge has been directed against the department, and it is not likely that the matter will be allowed to rest. A full inquiry will be made, and the result announced. All that we can say now is that we absolutely deny the accuracy of the statement which has been made, which does not in the least represent the facts. The charge came as a complete surprise to us. No complaint was made by Mr. Grindle Matthews when he was here, and all we know was that the experiment was unfortunately a failure for some reason known to those in charge, but with which we were unacquainted. It was further pointed out that tampering was unlikely, considering that the possession of an aerophone by the War Office in the field would be of immense value."
So, is it all hokum? Or did he just bring a broken one?
Well, it's an interesting one.
Let's play. Hokum or broken?
Hokum or broken. You'll be playing that throughout this episode. I like that a lot. So that was all written off as a misunderstanding, eventually. But during World War I, Grindle Matthews and another invention would have another run-in with the government. The Newcastle Herald, which is a newspaper from Pennsylvania, which had a really great article that I got a lot of information from. It's from a later report that they ran on the 24th of April 1924. But it says, In December 1915, England was terribly wrought up over air raids by Zeppelins. Her army and navy directors were in the market for an airplane that could be sent up without anybody on it and that could be directed and steered from below merely by a searchlight. To make a beginning, they asked whether a boat could be steered from shore by such means. Grindle Matthews announced he could do so. So one cold winter morning, some of the most distinguished men in England, headed by Admiral Lord Fisher and Lord Balfour, went out to Richmond Park.
Very nice.
Grindle Matthews launched on the pond his motorboat, Dawn, which had on board an octagonal cylinder composed of 8 graphite selenium tablets, each measuring 3 inches by a half inch, made for him by the famous scientist, Dr. Fournier d'Alba. Balfour stood by Grindle Matthews and told the latter what evolutions he wanted the boat to perform. It followed his instructions like a live thing. Next day, Grindle Matthews got his check. So the War Office bought this invention for £25,000, which is well over £1 million today.
Nice.
But they never actually used it.
Not nice.
So there's one last invention that I want to really briefly run through before we go on to the big event in Grindle Matthews' inventing career.
Okay.
So this is in 1921 when he claimed to have invented the world's first talking picture, which showed the Arctic explorer Ernest Shackleton shortly before he departed for his last expedition. But people very quickly pointed out that he was not the first to have invented the talkies, basically.
Yeah.
So he stated, oh, well, it's the first sound on film technology, but it almost certainly wasn't that either.
Ah, he's a liar, I see.
Yeah, so you can actually still watch the film also on the Pathé website. But
probably fine, thanks. It's probably rubbish.
But also, it doesn't have any of the audio, which is quite fitting,
which is
perhaps.
Quite the entire point. Have you... So I made an invention once.
Did you? What was it?
Well, I didn't actually make it. I thought of it.
Okay.
A hair product, like a hair gel or wax or pomade, which is also hand cream. So when you've got it all stuck on your hands after you sorted your hair out, just rub it in. Rub it in.
See, it could also be a conditioner. I mean, throw in...
You're being very Grindle Matthews right now.
And then the authorities or like the cosmetic people come up to you and they're like, I don't know, I think, what if it was like a deodorant? And you're like, could be that too.
Yeah, nice invention. Shame if something happened to it. But yeah, that's the nearest I've ever come to inventing anything, thinking of something that wouldn't work probably.
So it's now the early 1920s. And so far, Grindle Matthews has claimed to invent an aerophone.
Yeah.
A device for controlling ships. I've written shops, but it's ships remotely.
Ooh.
And sound on film technology. And, you know, they're a bit iffy. But the press love him. And his photo's everywhere. He's got his adverts. There's these amazing, like, romantic works of prose about his inventions. But, I mean, he's a bit hit or miss.
He's miss.
At this point.
He's miss.
Well, you know, he did invent the wireless boat control, so I guess.
I guess he did. Or,
this is
or
where
all of this is based on tiny men. Tiny men up in the plane.
There's just tiny men everywhere.
Tiny
he
men in the boat.
He just discovered ants.
Yeah, the guy flying the plane didn't hear it from the ground. There was just a guy standing behind him.
I've invented a wireless telephone. It's called projection.
Yeah, it's called shouting.
So this is where the big kind of stop the press event happens with Grindle Matthews. Starting with the Newcastle Herald again on the 24th of April 1924, which ran with the headline, Lightning Ray to Change Wars. London, 1923. Somewhere in the west of England, hidden by the British government, H. Grindle Matthews, young scientist, is experimenting with a mysterious and terrific power which is likely to change entirely the nature of the next war. This power is like lightning, artificially made and directed so that armies and materials can be destroyed at the will of one man. None is permitted to see the inventor, But one of his assistants described the ray to me in this way. It is a sort of path through which we transmit power. It is most easily compared to lightning. When lightning has no clear path, it zigzags about until it strikes a tree, house, or some other conductor, which gives it a path to the earth. The power we have discovered, a form of electricity, uses the day as a path, just as lightning uses the tree. It hasn't been tested out on a large scale yet, but I can say that in a distance of 64 feet, we have used it. We have killed mice instantly, shriveled up live plants, exploded gunpowder and cartridges, set fire to various inflammable things, lighted electric lamps and put out of action the magnetos of aeroplanes and motor cars. If our experiments on a large scale bear out what we have done in a small way, then our formulae show that for $15 million we could build a plant that would maintain a barrage for 50 miles around London and for 5 miles up in the air. As the ray is invisible, a hostile airplane crew could not dodge it and would not know when we were turning it in its direction. Zeppelins wouldn't live more than a few seconds.
So it's an invisible death ray that you can't see and that they haven't proven works.
Yes. Essentially, they have invented an invisible invention that is a death ray.
Well, I mean, I'm fine with the death ray being invisible. I'm just wondering why we still have a planet. Because as soon as we invent that, well, that's game over for us.
Well, there's a little spoiler for you.
Yeah.
So Grindle Matthews had been giving demonstrations of his latest invention to the press since 1923. The death ray, with which he stopped motor cars and killed mice with low doses of the device's power.
Just now, a low dose of, are we,
low dose of death.
Are we ruling out tiny men again? Because a tiny man could dress up as a mouse and pretend. A tiny man could stop
a car. Tiny man could kill a mouse.
Tiny man could kill a mouse.
Yeah, tiny man could climb into a car and cut some wires.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not ruling it out yet.
I'm not ruling anything out.
So sensational reports of this death ray started appearing across the world, along with the inventor's claim that for £3 million, so that's the $15 million, which is about £166 million today.
It's a chunk of change.
Yeah, he could create this protective shield over all of London. So Grindle Matthews made many statements to different papers about how his death ray would change the course of the war, such as this one, which comes from the Coshocton Tribune in Ohio on the 22nd of May 1924, which said, "It is my intention to give the first option of purchasing my invention to my own country, Britain. But while it is essentially a war weapon, at the same time it can be made a weapon of peace, inasmuch as if expectations are realized, war will become unthinkable. As a power that had warlike intentions would hesitate before embarking on war with a country whose strength, in invisible armament, was unknown."
I mean, yeah, that kind, yeah.
It makes sense.
Well, no, I mean, that's what we're doing now, isn't it, with nuclear weapons?
Well, yeah. But he even made a documentary of himself demonstrating the invention, which is also on the Parthe website.
Oh, that's quite cool.
But also with no audio, unfortunately. Well, it's got like this weird kind of like rickety song going on. But
is it the International Rag by Al Jolson and
How did you know? but so unsurprisingly, the inventor again caught the attention of the War Office. The Gloucester Citizen reported on the 24th of May 1924. "Mr. Grindle Matthews, the inventor of the death ray, had an interview at the Air Ministry today with Air Vice Marshal Sir Geoffrey Salmond, the Air Member for Supply and Research on the Air Council. Mr. Grindle Matthews stated after the meeting that a test had been arranged and would take place within the next few days. The talk may go towards securing his amazing invention for this country, for the inventor is very confident that his ray can satisfy the government. The ray, it is claimed, can set fire to any object that strikes and stop a motor or airplane engine. The inventor rather deprecates it being called the death ray and says it might cure as well as kill. It may possibly kill war, however."
Ah.
Ha ha. So the Air Ministry issued the following statement after the event, as printed in the Belfast newsletter on the 28th of May. The demonstration actually proposed by the inventor and shown yesterday, Monday, consisted in lighting an Osklin electric lamp, I think it's brand, and in stopping at will a small motorcycle engine from a distance of about 15 yards. The demonstrations were carried out in the inventor's laboratory, and all the apparatus being provided and arranged by him. The departmental representatives were shown nothing which would lead them to credit the statements that have appeared in the press as to the possibilities of the invention, and the conditions under which the demonstrations were made by Mr. Matthews were such that it was not possible to form any definite opinion as to the value of the device. So it was noted that as well as all of the stuff being provided by Grindel Matthews, the death ray looked distinctly different from the device that he'd shown in the documentary. Which you think he would have thought of before.
Say that again, sorry.
So you know how he made the documentary that kind of demonstrated his device doing all these incredible things?
I've heard of it, yeah.
The one that he showed the War Office looked completely different to the one that was in the movie.
Right.
So, I mean, if he's lying, he's not doing a great job of covering it up.
He doesn't seem to have been very good at any of this covering up business throughout.
So back to the Belfast newsletter. Mr. Matthews was accordingly offered an immediate opportunity to demonstrate the stopping by means of his ray of a small petrol motor, such as an ordinary motorcycle engine, to be provided by the government. He was not asked to disclose any information as to the means by which the rays were produced, or of the nature of the rays themselves. If this test proved successful, he was to be paid £1,000 immediately, the only condition being that he would allow the government 14 days to consider the basis of further financial negotiations for the purchase or development of his invention. Mr. Grindel Matthews has refused this offer, and it is understood that he has left the country.
He has flounced off.
I tell you what, there was picturing him flouncing off in his death ray. He wasn't the first person to announce that he'd invented a death ray.
Right.
Nor was he the last. And one of the people who did so afterwards, one of the reports said they were describing all of the things that this death ray would do. And then it said, the device can easily be tucked under one arm.
Wow.
And it was, I don't know, I just found that hilarious.
Is this the genesis of the Ghostbusters?
Sounds a bit like that. He left the country. Grindel Matthews claimed that he was now in negotiations with France. And this led to a movie-esque rush to the airport by the British government, as reported in the Gettysburg Times, a Pennsylvania newspaper again, from the 28th of May, 1924. And it says, the airplane bearing H. Grindel Matthews to Paris for negotiations with a French firm for the sale of his death ray invention left Tuesday a minute before a solicitor arrived at the Croydon Aerodrome, bearing a notice that the High Court had granted a temporary injunction to prevent the sale without the consent of three claimants who alleged that they owned 52% share in the invention.
Wow.
Mr. Matthews, who was understood to have declined the British Air Ministry's proposals for further tests of his invention, will be notified in Paris of the legal action taken. So at the airport, that government representative sent Grindel Matthews' assistant to Paris with another offer, but that offer was also declined. And Grindel Matthews was reported as saying in a statement to the press that I found in the Gloucestershire Chronicle on the 31st of May, a French corporation was formed this Wednesday morning with the Usines-du-Rhône capital for the purpose of exploiting five of my inventions, including talking movies and excluding the death ray. The latter is still open for bids, although the new corporation has the right to a percentage of the profits. I have 8 bids for the ray, including one from an American company, which I must not name. So while he's in France, loads of prominent scientists and skeptics from across the world start to really rip into Grindel Matthews and all of these claims that he's making. On the 15th of August 1924, the Kingsport Times, which is a paper from Tennessee quoted a professor, Robert Williams Wood, who was the Harvard Educated Experimental Physics Chair at Johns Hopkins University. He was also a member of the Royal Society of Great Britain and had won the gold medal for physics. And he said, "Nothing that Mr. Grindle Matthews has said or done would lead any trained scientist or engineer to place the slightest credence whatsoever in the death ray. The alleged discovery has been handled in a matter reminiscent of the dark room medium, rather than as a scientific experiment. If it could be proved, the event would create a new epoch in the annals of science."
That's pretty damning.
He further stated that any physicist would be willing to place himself at a distance of 65 feet in front of the beam.
Wow.
So, yeah, scientists all over the world are writing in also to say that they could replicate all of the experiments that Grindle Matthews had demonstrated with just simple physics.
Right.
And loads of aviators came forward saying that they would happily fly their planes into the death ray's path just to disprove it once and for all. Because
wow.
this was an argument that went on for ages in the press. The Western Gazette also published this report on the 6th of June 1924. During the discussion on a supplementary vote of £350,000 for the air service in the House of Commons on Wednesday night, Mr. Maxton referred to the so-called death ray experiments and inquired whether a government expert had not placed himself within 10 yards of the ray, which was supposed to kill, at a distance of some miles, and had escaped unhurt. And it has, in brackets, laughter. Mr. Leach said that was so. The official was doing well. And it has, in more brackets, laughter. French scientists were also sceptical, and it doesn't seem like any deal was ever made with them. So, after a brief stop back in London, Grindle Matthews went to the US. So this was in July 1924. He was, during this time, apparently offered $25,000 to do a demonstration at Madison Square Garden. But he said he couldn't do a demonstration because he wasn't allowed to demonstrate the device outside of the UK, which was complete nonsense.
Is that not true because of the injunction?
No, he's just not allowed to sell it.
Ah, right.
But then he ended up staying in the US, in your neighbourhood, actually. This is a report from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle on the 15th of February 1925. Which said, "Discouraged by the conservatism of the scientific men of England and their wait-and-see attitude towards his inventions, he will set up his laboratory here. It may be in Brooklyn or on Long Island, and sometime in April he will invite the newspaper men to attend an exhibition and test of his numerous inventions."
That's why I moved here. The wait-and-see attitude of the British scientific community about my death ray.
About your hair gel.
Yes.
He promised that they should see wonderful things, and during a talk at the Hotel Waldorf yesterday, he revealed himself as a man anxious to deliver the goods rather than talk about them.
But he's just made a career of flim-flam.
Well, that's what you do in the US.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone's
hustling. And you know what? On the 4th of March 1925, the Taunton Courier and Western Advertiser reported, "Death ray sold. Snapped up by America," says the inventor. "Mr. H. Grindle Matthews, the inventor of the death ray, stated on his arrival at Southampton from New York by the Cunard liner Aquitania on Friday night that he had disposed of his invention to the United States. I was only in America for a week," he said, "but that was long enough to convince me that England is slow. In that brief period, America snapped up my invention." He refused to divulge the sum he is to receive for the death ray, but he stated that the negotiations had concluded most satisfactorily. "There is one thing that pleases me above all else," he said. "That is, that I gave England the first chance."
He did. He did, that is true.
He did. It was fair.
The first chance to waste money on his nonsense.
Sure. I mean, like, who knows? I think he was full of stuff we're not allowed to say on this show, but he lived in the States for quite a while, and apparently he ended up with a job at Warner Brothers.
Oh, nice.
I couldn't find any info on that in the newspapers, but I found a contemporary article. I think that was to do with his talking pictures and developing that.
Right.
Oh, he also, I didn't snip this, but he married a lady inventor from the state. She was known as Lady Edison or something.
Wow.
In 1934, he moved to Wales, where he lived until his death in 1941. And this is the obituary which ran in a number of papers, including the Belfast Newsletter on the 12th of September 1941. It says, H. Grindle Matthews, inventor and radio pioneer. Mr. H. Grindle Matthews, Death Ray Matthews, inventor and pioneer in radio and talkie film production, has died at Swansea Valley, where he had cut himself off from the outer world, in a laboratory surrounded with electrically charged barbed wire fences and burglar alarms.
Mm.
He was 61.
Yeah, notably absent from his home defence system is a death ray.
Yeah, see, this is true. Well, maybe it was then, you couldn't see it.
I think you can
maybe
see
maybe someone just didn't get close enough.
I think you see the physical object, but it's
maybe you'd see all the dead things lying around in this globe.
Those are tiny men.
So I don't really know what to make of him, to be honest. I don't really know if he was, I mean, I think for the most part he was probably just making it up, but he did invent some things that were actually legit.
I mean, the man willingly and voluntarily ate phosphoric acid and sulfuric acid. So
yeah, see,
we don't
true.
Know what that does to your brain. We're not doctors. He might have
well,
thought it was real.
Also, yeah, exactly. See, I was thinking about that because that was so early in his career. And there was one of the things that he used as evidence that his death ray was real was the fact that he'd lost sight in one eye.
Jesus.
And he was like, oh, this is because of my experiments with the death ray. But actually, looking into the phosphorine that he was taking, one of the side effects was sight loss. So I was like, interesting. But it was also, obviously, it was full of all sorts of things. So all of the ingredients he just might not have been right in the head.
But that's what the whole Match Girl strikes were about, because they were, they had Fossey Jaw from, I don't know if that's the same as sort of the same kind of phosphorus or whatever. But it just dissolved their bones.
See, I felt a bit sad because, there were a lot of damning reports and things saying, how he was a con man and stuff like that from various people. And I kind of understand it, but at the same time, I felt kind of weirdly sorry for him because I was like, I don't know. I don't think he's doing it out of malice. I think he might just be a bit eccentric.
He seems to make a pretty good career out of it.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe
I don't know. I just found him a fascinating guy.
It's one of those people who's a product of his time, I suppose, coming out of that invention crazy Victorian era.
Yeah.
And everything was magic. Now we're also cynical and we can just Google everything, but then it's he's made a death ray that's invisible. And if I was a kid then, I'd have been like, that's awesome. I want to believe him.
Yeah. And that invention, the test with the wireless telephony, even if that was fake, it's still kind of amazing that even took place. He wasn't just talking about it. He was literally making these demonstrations happen and going countless times to the War Office to demonstrate to them.
And
I don't know.
We'd just come out of one of the bloodiest conflicts. Well, at that point, probably the bloodiest in human history. So
you can imagine the kind of hope it would have given people.
Yeah, if some guy's like, I've got this thing that'll stop wars, you'd be like, sweet, because diplomacy hasn't worked so far.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Shame it wasn't real. One of the other things that we like to do in the newspapers is look at the letters to the editor and the poetry that was being printed in various points in history, because it's a really good way to learn, what was important to people. And different parts of history and the different levels of quality in certain newspapers. so, for example,
you mean always great?
I happened across it. I've got a letter and a poem that are related, but I also happened across this poem in the 18th of October 1902 copy of the Liverpool Herald from New South Wales, and it's entitled "Shortest Poem," and the poem is we despise flies.
See, I like that.
It's efficient.
It's efficient. It also requires some mispronunciation, but, you know.
Yeah, we despise.
I'm for that.
I despise them. Anyway, so my related letter and poem, both quite short, but I'm really, like, petty. Real, ooh, bitter, you know, pettiness.
I love a good bit of pettiness.
So it's from the Canberra Times. The letter is from the 9th of July, 1979. The headline is Wayne Poem Not Funny. It says, "Sir, I read with disgust and some degree of annoyance Ian Warden's so-called poem about John Wayne. John Wayne was a man who, though not a great actor, gave entertainment and enjoyment to millions of people all over the world for a long period of time. If it was intended to be funny, I, like many others, failed to see any humour. I was rather disappointed too with the Canberra Times for even printing it." So that's a grumpy man. So I was like...
Right.
What?
I love that it admits he wasn't a good actor, though.
But what could he... I was like, what could the poem possibly have been that it makes him feel so
you found it.
So I went back and found it. It's really, really short again.
Amazing.
The headline, and it's after John Wayne died.
John Wayne despised flies.
John Wayne was fine with flies.
Okay.
John Wayne didn't like engines.
Oh.
Based on his filmography.
Wow.
Big John Wayne is the headline of this poem. And it goes, "So Big John Wayne has drawled his last. His life has run its course. An impressive man, but always out-acted by his horse."
Oh.
And that's the poem. That's the poem that pissed this guy off so
that's
much.
That's so great, though. Yeah. I love that.
I think it's
really
funny.
It's from 1902.
Yeah, 1979. That was from 1979.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
thought you said 1982. I was going to say.
Your chronology, Jesus, of John Wayne is a mess. That's the...
yeah, that's true.
What was his name?
I didn't think about that.
What was the guy's name? Grindle Matthews. That's... Yeah, if Grindle Matthews had invented talkies when he said he did, maybe. I think that is the show for this fortnight.
Yep, that's all from me.
Thank you, everybody, as always, for tuning in. We will list all of the archives that we use for the making of this podcast in the show notes.
And if you want to find us on Facebook or Twitter, we're at Paper Podcast on both.
Yes, and if you get a chance and you feel like it, please do rate and review us. It's very important.
It is very helpful. Playing us out is Al Jolson and Sophie Taylor with The International Rag, with thanks to the Free Music Archive.
Thank you, Free Music Archive. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks. Bye. Dukes and lords and Russian czars, men who own their motor cars, throw up their shoulders to that raggedy melody full of originality. Italian opera singers have learned to snap their fingers. Give it on, baby. The world goes round to the sound of the international. 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 The international rag.